Hey, everybody, and welcome to the LSAT Demon Daily. My name is Eric, and joining us today is Nick, who is a former LSAT Demon student who crushed the LSAT and now is on his way off to law school in the fall. Nick, thanks so much for joining today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me, Eric.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. Always love hearing just the variety of stories that our students bring and what a great diversity of applicant types and student types that I get to encounter on a daily basis coming through the Demon. And I think you have an inspiring story which shows or that will show to other students who may feel like they don't fit the typical law student, LSAT student mold, that they're not alone, that we come from all sorts of backgrounds. And I think the path that you have taken to law school is really interesting and really inspiring. So maybe jump into that. You're a slightly older applicant. You are making a career change. Maybe talk briefly about where you're coming from, what your, like, briefly what your history is and why it is that you are now making a change and going off to law school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and this is why I wanted to come share my story and sent that email off in the first place. Real broad strokes, moved to college after high school. Just really had to get out of my hometown. That, you know, is the feeling that I had anyway. And fell flat on my face. I was not ready for responsibilities, having no family around, having to get myself to class, having to set my own schedule. These things were just not in my acumen. So got kicked out of school, didn't want to go back home, started working and really figuring out how to do all of these things, right? Adulting, as some folks call it. Figured out very quickly that I wasn't going to get anywhere without an education, a formal education. So started putting money away, started going to community college, paying my way as I went along. Bounced around. I, you know, went from my hometown in Miami out to Boston. Was able to live in New York for just kind of like a gap year. Applied to schools while living in New York and moved out to San Francisco, sight unseen. Had never been out here before, but just grinding and looking for opportunities. Finished up school. Same kind of thing, just kept grinding, kept looking for opportunities, talking to people and networking, and was able to find a TA job at a private school. And that just kind of took off for me. I was just in the right place, at the right time, with the right outlook and mentality. And, you know, that you can't plan for, but you can be ready for it.
Sure.
And I was able to turn that into a really rewarding career for a number of years until I kind of got burnt out around the pandemic time. Just the number of adjustments that I had to make, not only to my personal schedule, but to professional expectations in students, the expectations that everyone, all of the constituents had of me. It took the taxation of that job to a point that I couldn't afford anymore.
Sure.
So, you know, that's in 2020. I started thinking about law school in 2019 because I could see on the horizon, this isn't going to be forever. I can't teach for 30, 40 more years. And it was just kind of a thing that I talked about for a long time. And I realized, man, am I ever going to, I asked myself, am I ever going to do this? And I spoke about it just to create accountability and be beholden to my friends, my support. So in earnest, I sat down in 2021. I read a book called Road to 180.
Okay.
And it said straight up, you know, this is the most important test of your life. Where you go to school depends on this. If and how much money they give you in a scholarship depends on this. Your employment opportunities depend on the school that you attend and graduate from. And this was just so much to wrap my head around. I thought this was a standardized test. I took the GRE a few years ago and did not prepare and did well enough. So it was that kind of feedback that I did not need. It's very toxic feedback.
Probably nothing worse for you than easily won success, huh?
Absolutely not. And that comes up again in this LSAT story. I just finished teaching hybrid, teaching in person, commuting, you know, readjusting to life after the lockdown of the pandemic. And I put that book down and said, I need summer to relax, recharge, go to baseball games, and drink beer in the sun. So school year goes by. I don't study at all during the school year, June 2022. So this past June, I take a diagnostic. It's 158. This is, again, the toxic feedback. And I think this is going to be just a walk in the park. So I really relax again.
Sure.
Yeah. Did you have a sense? Because that is an extraordinarily high diagnostic. Did you have a sense at the time for just how high that was, how good that was for a diagnostic?
Not for a diagnostic. I saw really how close I was to what I would need to get into a quality school. Mm-hmm. So I, figured I can close that gap easily. And that's just not the type of mentality that's necessary for success on this test or most things in life that are worth having. I told a good friend of mine who was an attorney, I told him my score. He's like, that's great. That's, pretty much where I was. He went to a very good school. So I was very heartened by that. I figured, wow, I'm on track. All right. The summer keeps going and I keep taking tests and I see my scores are just dipping. So I'm like, okay. And I realized that this was a flash in the pan because I went from 158 to maybe 154, 153. And the lowest score I got was 147. So I'm like, okay, let me do some research. I found the demon and I bought in at the that low tier, that $95 tier. And I also had decided at this point, like, I'm not going to go back to my full-time teaching job. Like, that's done. I need to move on. And, I need to rip the bandage off and take this seriously.
So you really dove in.
Yeah. However, I was on a very limited budget, on a very limited timeline, because this was August of 22. By Ben and Nathan's advice, I should be working on getting applications out in the next month or two.
Sure.
So this is also a story of like doing everything wrong and still kind of having a good result. Mm-hmm. Or definitely having a good result. I'm very happy with it. I sign up for the self-study tier and I just start grinding because I decide this is now my full-time job. Every single point on this test, as I said before, translates into thousands of dollars and extrapolated over the life of a debt, tens of thousands of dollars. And again, like you said earlier, I'm an older student. This was my shot. I had enough money to take 1 year, to apply myself to law school. And I'll be 39 when I graduate. So I don't have a long horizon to pay off or service, right, a large debt. So the test became my full-time job. I had other work. And really early on, I learned I can't talk to people. I can't make plans. And this is, maybe not an approach that works for everyone, but I decided to become obsessed with the LSAT. I needed to...
Full monk mode.
Yeah. Eat, breathe, sleep, everything. If I wasn't making money that day, or if I wasn't having a day to relax and kind of de-stress, it was maybe 6 to 8 hours of...
Yeah, I was going to ask what sort of hours we were talking about. So you treated it like a full-time job. That's definitely not what we recommend for most students. I think most students start to see diminishing returns after a few hours and just if you're able to stay sharp and truly bring your full attention to the test. So what was your experience with that, with doing that many hours per day? did you break that up? Were you taking breaks so that you weren't, that you were refreshing yourself throughout? Like, how did you actually make those a productive 6 to 8 hours? Because I imagine that would be really challenging.
It was. It was incorporating a mix of modalities. And this is kind of where I think the teacher brain of that I have came out, where I'd start my day. I'll tell you where it settled, the best routine that I had.
Sure.
I'd start my day with coffee, watch the news, pick apart arguments, because I'll watch, you know, all the different networks and like, okay, this is what they're doing, this is what they're doing. And I would learn from the test and apply the test to what these folks were saying.
Not hard to do with some TV news pundits, I imagine.
Yeah. So I watched the news for a bit, transition over to LSAT specific videos, either go and then go for a walk and just kind of clear my head a little bit, or go for a run. And then coming back from exercise and doing a section and reviewing, and that's it for the day. Decompressing with my partner, who's been, you know, quiet from the moment I said I'm doing a section, and she works from home.
Yeah, shout out to all the LSAT partners out there. My own then fiance, now wife, was around throughout my whole study, and I know anyone who is, you know, particularly in, well, you're talking about Bay Area rents. You probably don't, sorry, have a huge place, so not. If you're living with somebody else, they are around while you're studying. So, yeah, shout out to anyone who is accommodating for those of us who put in those study hours.
Yeah, and she was so respectful and understanding of like, I need to watch these videos. And she's working here at the house, or she's working right beyond this wall on phone calls all day, or Zoom calls all day. And I'm like, man, I need to focus. And also, it was good practice because it's an at-home test now, and anything can happen. So that was another frame for me that changed, where it's like, you know, I can't control outside of the apartment. I might ask her, I might be able to ask Sarah to be quiet because I have something to do, but I can't ask the car that the panic alarm just went off. That's out of my control. Maybe a test, and again, Ben and Nathan don't recommend a test every week, but it was maybe every other week to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I signed up for the October test, maintained my routine, saw my scores, you know, gradually improve, started plateauing back in the high 150s, was very encouraged by that. Kept working, and then got into the 160s, and considering my timeline and everything else that was going on, trying to get my letters of rec, trying to write my personal narrative, like this was just, these were very long days.
Sure.
Test days coming up, I realized, you know, this is my shot. So I'm trying to raise the floor of my scores, because I would always score in a range. I think that's normal. And I was less concerned with scoring as high as possible on one test, because I could see how erratic all the scores could be. I just wanted to raise my floor, get all the easy questions right. That's the first thing that I really, really wanted to do. Don't flub those. Get perfect scores on logic games. And then come what may with, you know, the 10, 15 really hard questions on the test.
Sure.
That could, you know, really determine the score.
I think that's a great attitude to have. You know, you talked about your, it sounds as if your diagnostic was the high end of your range when you took the test for the first time. And then, you know, who knows whether your early studies, you actually regressed. More likely, your range at the time was probably 147 to 158. And that's totally normal to have a PT score range that's wide. I had also probably a 10, 11 point score range at the time when I took my official test. But gradually bringing your average up so that, like you said, you're not looking to score your very best on test day, just what a normal practice test score, average score might be for you, as long as you just have to replicate normal rather than outperform yourself to get the score you need, that's always going to be the most reliable and healthiest way of going into an official test.
Yeah, it's a test of precision. It's precision of language, but also just narrowing down and getting as close to your true ability, I think, right? That's my interpretation of what the score is.
Yeah.
Your true ability with the problems that are presented.
So you took the October test in 2022. That was your first official test attempt. How did that go for you?
It was great because I felt prepared for it. Like I said, this was my job. I had 2 months. I had limited income. So I, knowing all these things, I had to really have an athlete mentality. I have one big game coming up, or one like Olympics, and I'm in 4 events. You know, I'm reading comp, the analysis, the games, and then one mystery. Who knows what it's going to be? But if I'm prepared and I can just rely on my training, I don't need to stress about the test. I just go out and do me, which is what you just said, right? Just do what's normal for you, and the dividends are going to be there.
So were there any surprises or curveballs thrown at you on test day, stuff that made the testing experience more difficult than you anticipated, or pretty smooth?
No, I think all the prep work paid off, you know, just huge dividends. The most annoying thing was waiting, because I was just so ready and I wanted it. Mm-hmm. And this was another mentality that I got from the demon, was predicting the answers. And it's a thing that I took to an extreme where I was like, I want to attack this test and I want to punish the test. It was really the approach that I had. The test isn't going to come out and hold my hand. It's not open to interpretation, right? There's right answer, 4 wrong answers. This is how we're going to do it. It's unforgiving. Mm-hmm. It's easy, you know, in a lot of ways. Because it's so black and white, but it is unforgiving. Mm-hmm. So I really took that mentality to heart. I think I drank a quadruple espresso, a lot of Cuban coffee that morning. And the waiting is what killed me, like waiting for the proctor, waiting for everything to get started. But once the test started, I saw what the second, or in the test, I saw what the double section was, the experimental, and I, you know, had a great sigh of relief, and it was all downhill from there, because I knew that my stamina was there, cognitive load, I'd be able to make it, and the test had a greater level of enjoyment.
Nice. You had fun doing your official LSAT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Because I attacked it. Because it was a game. It was a game. The whole thing was a game for me.
You were taking the test on your terms, not just reacting and trying to survive.
Yeah.
Nice. So how did you score?
So I scored a 166, which ended up being 3 points higher than I'd scored before, which was a tremendous, like, shock and a blessing, right? But it's a testament always to, like, hard work paying off.
Yeah, you only do that. You only outperform your best practice test score on official test day if you're not trying to reach for it. If you approach it with the attitude that you had, which was just stick to the game plan, approach this test like I know how, be confident, trust that I can predict the answers. And I think where people get themselves into trouble and end up scoring lower than they'd like is when they try to do better than they've ever done before. It'd be like if, I don't know, going back to some sports analogy, having just come off of the NBA Finals. It'd be like if Aaron Gordon were to suddenly decide in Game 4 of the NBA Finals, you know what? Nikola Jokic, whatever. I'm the star of this team. I need to play better and do better and achieve things. I'm going to chuck it up from 30 feet. I'm going to run point on this offense on every possession. I need to be better and totally throw off the game plan that the team had. I don't know if that's a perfect comparison, but you need to accept sort of where you're at and just do what you've been trained to do. And I think this sounds like exactly what you did.
100%. You have to stay within yourself, I would say. Like, if I was going to give advice, it would be test day advice. Stay within yourself. Hopefully by test day, you've developed a plan for the test. Like I alluded to, mine was get all the easy points. They count the same as the hard questions. So making sure I did that, and then also just feeling confident in crushing games.
And you are confident that you scored perfectly on the games on test day?
Yeah.
It's a good feeling, right?
I'll never know, but like as soon as that test was done, it felt so good to rip up that paper and just
nice.
Know that that aspect of my plan definitely worked.
So a 166 outperforming your best PT score on your first official test attempt, the schools that you were interested in, and the sort of places that you were targeting for applications, you knew a 166 was going to be more than enough to get you a good scholarship somewhere. So tell me about what came next and what's happening for you this fall.
Yeah, well, I knew that the score would play, and I'm a splitter. So here's the other thing that I wanted to impress upon people. Because I got kicked out of school 18 years ago, that came back to bite me. There was a lot of writing that I had to do for all my applications. One of the many things that I did listen to Ben and Nathan about was to apply broadly and just have an open mind. One thing that I will caution people, if you want this, you have to be willing to work for it. And if you work for it, it's going to come. It might not be 2 months. And definitely, I think that if I kept working and had more resources to keep going and even put it off another year, I could raise that 166. Get greedy. If you have the time for that, do that. But I applied broadly, got some great offers, and I'm super excited to be attending University of Nebraska in the fall.
Excellent. We won't go into the details, but with a truly remarkable scholarship. So well done, Nick. I mean, that's awesome to hear that you had a game plan. You executed it. It's paying off for you. Do you mind sharing even just vaguely, if you prefer, what your GPA is?
It was a 2.6, all said and done.
A 2.6. So if you are listening to this and you question whether with a less than optimal GPA, you can make it to law school on a great scholarship, Nick is living proof that you can. So thanks for sharing that, Nick. Really appreciate it. I'm sure that'll be inspiring to a lot of people.
Yeah. And I hope they take that. And if they want it, again, do the work.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, you've already been super generous with your time. Thank you so much for joining. Any last words of advice or any final messages that you would want to share with people listening who might just be starting their LSAT journeys right now?
Keep checking in with yourself, right? I think it's a journey. I'm shocked and amazed by the people that stick to this journey for years. And my journey, like the interest started years ago, but the work was very compressed. I did that to myself, right? And I paid a lot of prices. There were a lot of consequences for my inaction for so long. But I would recommend, I did it at the right time also. It just worked out for me. What I would say to someone just starting out, check in with yourself and keep checking in with yourself about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Because this requires a lot of work, and when it's done, it's done. I already took the LSAT. I have the fruit, you know, I've reaped that harvest, and it's over. There's another challenge ahead of me, and then it's the rest of my life in a profession that I've thought long and hard about that I want to do. And if you're just starting out, don't lose sight of that. It's the first step in something that will change your life.
Well said. Well, thank you again, Nick, for coming on. Really appreciate you sharing your story. I know that a lot of our listeners will find your story and your journey inspiring and a testament to what you can do and what you can overcome with some hard work and perhaps a little obsession. And I just couldn't be happier to hear that you're on your way to law school and doing so kind of on your terms with a really excellent scholarship in hand. So thank you again so much for coming on. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Yeah, same here. Thank you, Eric.
Well, if you want to ask a question or write into the show about some LSAT or law school admissions news, you can do so at daily@lsatdemon.com. Thanks so much for listening.